Greetings, programs and users. It is time once again for another episode of Old Nerds Drinking. I am John Patrick, the Master Control Program. Here with me in the Nerd Cave is...
It's me, Rojan, the other guy on the other side of the table, sitting in front of the microphone, looking at a bottle of Jose Cuervo Classic Margarita for reasons.
There is a reason.
There is reasons.
And we've got to, as old nerds who are drinking, we have lost a true legend of the drinking community. This past week, we lost Jimmy Buffett, and my soul is still in mourning for it.
Has it been a week? It's been 2 weeks now. Yeah. I think it's been about 2 weeks.
I think it's been about 2 weeks.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems a little bit longer than that.
Yeah, I'm a huge Jimmy Buffett fan. Like, I'm not one of those, like, parrot head peoples. I actually just like his music. And it's so weird because... Like, as I grew older, because he's been still making albums this whole time. So, like, when I was in my 20s, and it's like, yeah, I'm listening to the songs you know by heart, all his early stuff, all of his party stuff. And then when I started getting into my 30s, that's when I found his more modern stuff, like Far Side of the World, Barometer Soup. And those are more mellow, kind of, like, introspective albums. And it's like, okay, now as I'm getting older, his music is aging with me. And yeah, so it was just, he was one of those guys that, like, the more you read about him, the more you just realize what a kind-hearted person he was. Very laid back, very, just kind of about living life and enjoying it. There was an article that came out years ago. One of his passions is, airplanes, and he had donated 2 fully restored vintage airplanes to a museum in Norfolk, Virginia. And he's like, yeah, just don't tell anybody they're from me. Like he donated them to the museum specifically under the auspice of them being anonymous donations. And they only announced that they were from him after he had passed. And just stuff like that. So I think in true Jimmy Buffett fashion, we are drinking some Jose Cuervo pre-mixed margaritas, because Jimmy Buffett's music isn't about, like, the perfect craft cocktail.
I'm just saying, if you really want to do it for maximum effect, you probably should have gotten some Jimmy Buffett Margaritaville margaritas. They actually have those made, but I don't know if they sell them around here.
I was going to say, they don't. Trust me, I looked. So it's not about the, like, stressing about the perfect cocktail. It's about a life of enjoying what is, and just, it's very dudely.
Very dudely.
Yeah, like it jives with the dude.
Yeah, you got a point there, yeah.
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 So yeah, we're just not going to phase over it, and we're going to have this margarita for Jimmy. Clank. Oh, and yeah. It's vile.
Yeah.
Oh, it's limey. It's just that little bit of, like, rubbing alcohol.
Ah.
Yep.
Oh. It tastes chemically.
It does.
It tastes like chemical. It doesn't taste like, I don't know. I mean.
It tastes like a melted lime popsicle.
It's probably been about 20 years since I've had Jose Cuervo margarita.
Oh.
And, wow.
Yeah. I mean, I've had good tequila, and I've had Jose Cuervo.
And now you've had Jose Cuervo classic margarita, which is not very good.
Now,
there's people out there like, what?
Yeah. Now, I do have to make a quick aside before I roll into the next topic. There is also something else we need to pour out for. For today, September 17th, marks 40 years since the children boarded the Dungeons & Dragons roller coaster and were never seen again.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
Today is the 40th anniversary of the first episode.
They never came back home, did they?
No, because it was pulled halfway through the second season. So there were, like, a couple of episodes for the second season where there was stuff going on, and then, like, 2 or 3 episodes aired, and then they pulled the plug, and it just never finished anything.
Oh, my God. Now I feel old.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I hate it when people do stuff like that dates me. Wow.
And there were a couple of attempts to, in D&D comic books, to give them more story, and then they did make that cameo in the D&D movie, mm-hmm. But yes, ostensibly they never returned from the land of Dungeons and Dragons.
Wow, man. I never watched the second season. I do remember watching the first season. And I don't, was it on Saturday morning or was it an afternoon cartoon?
I believe it was a Saturday morning because that is the era where it was like, it was all about the Saturday morning cartoon. Saturday morning was basically just owned by kids programming.
You know, the Saturday morning cartoons are weird for me because I remember them being there and then they were just gone. And I always thought it was just because I aged out of them and quit watching Saturday morning cartoons, but I guess at a certain point, there was no more Saturday morning cartoons.
No, so, yeah, and we talked about this in a previous episode. Basically, what happened is towards the end of the 90s, early 2000s, they got a lot more stringent about children's programming, what was acceptable, what mm-hmm. wasn't acceptable. And then the move to cable networks. So a lot of stuff left the like hardcore networks, and it just never became profitable. The reason those shows lasted as long as they did, and the reason they were as profitable as they was, is they were just half an hour commercials for toys.
Yeah, and cereal and stuff like that. Yeah.
So when the market for toys and the like the driving selling power of toys dried up, that was the death knell of the cartoons. But the secret topic, because I've been hinting for a week that, like, I had this topic and I wanted to get your opinion on it and I wanted to do it cold because I want your honest opinion on this, ties into the Jimmy Buffett thing.
Oh, boy.
Which full disclosure, Rojan told me, like, before we started the episode, he's like, yeah, I never really liked Jimmy Buffett.
I don't. I really do not like Jimmy Buffett. I don't know any of his music, really. I don't. I've never been into the whole Jimmy. I mean, I respect the guy. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with the guy personally. And if you are a Jimmy Buffett fan, great. Good on you. That's fine. And I know that there were parrot heads. Is that what they were called?
Yeah,
correct, parrot heads. Yeah, there were people that would, like, follow him around and go to his concerts, like Grateful Dead concerts and stuff. And I remember going to paintball tournaments when I used to be a big-time paintball player, going to tournaments in different states and staying at hotels. And you could tell when Jimmy Buffett was in town because people would travel and stay at the hotels, and they would always have their Hawaiian shirts, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And there's another long story that I won't go into because I already talked about before the show. But I've just never been a Jimmy Buffett fan, like, at all.
Hey, man, I'm never going to be a Taylor Swift fan, but it doesn't mean she don't got got talent. It just means her music don't speak to me.
Exactly. And Buffett's music just never at all in any way. I was listening to, like, industrial music and stuff like that, and techno and all this stuff growing up. And Jimmy Buffett was just like, I'm not going to listen to this crap. So when you're naming off all the albums and stuff, I'm like, I have no clue what you're talking about. But,
well, like I said, it's most of, there's a lot of the parrot head people who mainly just do his early stuff. There's tons of people who claim to be hardcore Jimmy Buffett fans, and all they know is literally the album, The Songs You Know by Heart, which is the Jimmy Buffett greatest hits.
I don't know any, or it is of no care or concern to me whatsoever. I mean, it sucks the guy died. I mean, I get that. It's bad for the fans and stuff, like, because I know, like, I'm a huge Tool and Maynard Keenan freak. And I know there's a lot of people out there that aren't into that, and that's fine. So, you know, and I don't expect people to be that way, but, you know, yeah, it's just the whole Jimmy Buffett thing is it's completely lost. It's like talking to me about something that I have no clue at all about. I just don't care. I just never been of a sorry to take away your thunder, but go ahead if you want to.
Well, I am, because this is the start of what I hope to be a very long and interesting conversation, but is Parrothead a religion?
I don't know if that's the case. Are deadheads a religion? Is
so this
fish people a religion?
This is something that hit me. Well, because like I said, this really did hit me hard. It's music that I listen to when I need to feel something. Like there's certain songs of his that just resonate with me emotionally, and I was thinking about it, and it's like we've joked a lot about religions and that. So it just hit me, like, is this a religion? So of course I went to Google, and according to the European Council, so I'm assuming it's something to do with the European Union, a religion is a collection of cultural systems, belief systems, and worldviews that relate humanity to spirituality and sometimes to moral values. Many religions have narratives, symbols, and traditions, sacred histories, that are intended to give meaning to life or to explain the origins of life or the universe. So, like, this is just a broad stroke definition of religion. So let's apply that to the Jimmy Buffett, the parrot head. So you have a prophet. Jimmy is the prophet. He brings the message. The classic differentiation between a religion and a cult is a cult, the leader of the system of belief is alive. When they pass on and become supernatural, it changes to religion. So now we have an idea, and we have a prophet who has passed. It does have a narrative. So this is going to be hard because you haven't listened to his music. But again,
this may be lost on me completely.
This may be lost on you. But like in his music, I was telling you, there's the message of kind of like learning to accept life and find joy in simple pleasures, and try to reduce stress from your life. That island feeling, the like, oh well, like, yep, the whole second or the last verse of Margaritaville, it's like, I blew out my flip-flop, I stepped on a pop top, cut my heel, had to cruise on back home, but there's booze in the blender, and soon it will render that frozen concoction that helps me hang on. So it's like, you know, you go out, you have a bad day, you hurt yourself, but you know what, you're gonna go home, you're gonna have a drink, you're going to chill, and you're just not going to let that affect your life. So now we're moving into a philosophy. In the same way, dudism has, like, its own philosophy.
I don't know, again, because I'm not at all... This really is going to be lost on me, but I
trust me, because I'm going to go further with it. This was just kind of what started the conversation.
I mean, I go to George Carlin. I could see George Carlin being far more of a religion than Jimmy Buffett. But
well, George Carlin wouldn't be a religion. George Carlin is
a prophet.
No, more of a philosopher. So he like how his worldview is like he is not telling you how to live your life. He is just looking at life and saying his opinions of it. So basic, like George Carlin would...
it's observational comedy.
Yeah. George Carlin would fit the definition of like the original Greek philosophers like Socrates. So not so much a religion, but a philosophical belief. Or not philosophical.
Spiritual?
Not spiritual, because there's no supernaturalism in George Carlin. So yeah, it would be philosophical. True. It would be philosophical. That was the right word. Next, with the parrot heads, they have ceremonies and traditions. So like at the Jimmy Buffett concerts, like we were talking about, you have the guys who are always in the Hawaiian shirts. They like another tradition is they have these obnoxious fucking giant 6 foot tall parrot hats. That's where the whole term parrot head came from.
Mm-hmm.
But they have the gap. And like, even without Jimmy Buffett, you have like local groups that will do like parrot head parties where everybody gets together, you're drinking drinks, you're listening to Jimmy Buffett. So you have a ceremony of service, of worship, where you're getting together, you're talking about Jimmy Buffett songs, you're getting in that mindset. And you're getting in that philosophy.
I still don't agree with you, but go ahead. I'll continue on with this. Because if that's the case, see, everything that you're saying, I can apply to different groups, like ICP, for example.
And that is exactly it. Is that in the broadest definitions of what defines religion, like, why do we have such a narrow view of what is religion when... if you look hard enough, you can make anything a religion.
Yeah, which is why... see, again, you might be talking to the wrong person because I have a huge disdain for organized religion.
Actually, that makes me talking to the right person.
Yeah, see, I'm not feeling anything that you're saying right now at all.
Right.
For me, Jimmy Buffett's...
But here's the thing. But of this. Like, yes, Jimmy Buffett's not going to do this for you. But if we switch this to situation to Tool, or ICP. How does that change your opinion?
It doesn't, because I would never take a band that, it, for me, it's just a band. Like, I enjoy their music. I enjoy the things that they're saying. Like, Tool is a very deep band for me because because of the spirituality of the stuff that they're singing about and a lot of the things that they're talking about in their lyrics and a lot of their imagery and things like that. But at no point do I look at that and try to transpose it over to religion in any way or whatever. So, but then again, Tool does seem to be very much anti-religion because...
And remember, but does Tool give meaning to life?
Not really, no. It's just, you know, it's this music that I listen to feel good or whatever. But you got to also understand, though, my how I think about things and everything is very much in line with what they're putting out and what they're doing and the things that they're saying. But... That's more of a spirituality thing and not a religion thing. See, I'm one of those people that there's a meme out there where it has the difference between religion and spirituality, and it has the fish sitting inside of the bowl of water, and it says this is religion, and the fish is stuck in the bowl. Whereas, and it says this is spirituality, where it has a fish in the ocean looking at the fish inside the bowl. In the fishbowl.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like when you deal with religion, then you're boxing things in to a certain extent. And I just, I'm not somebody who's, I don't subscribe to any kind. And I actually repel away from things that are kind of a religious aspect, because for me, it's a means of, I don't want to have something that's a means of control over something like that. I don't want to have something to affect.
So
that's hard to put into words.
No. From what I understand is you're looking at religion in the concept of an organization, specifically a organization of beliefs like the Catholic Church and all that.
Well, generally that's, I mean...
But I'm talking about religion as an abstract construct. So let's say I'm talking more about spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Like the concept of something...
See, Jimmy Buffett would fit more in with spirituality than religion, in
my
opinion.
Okay, so maybe we're just mix-matching terms.
Possibly.
So, yeah.
Well,
so...
The way that we interpret things and see things are very... Because, if you want me to go into it deeper, I don't talk about it very much.
That's the whole point of this conversation.
It's not something that
We're going to deep dive.
It's not something that I make known all the time, but I don't hide it. I used to hide it a lot, but I'm very much involved with magical practice... a lot of that kind of stuff. I don't subscribe to any certain kind of magic or whatever. I've been told that I am a chaos magician. But again, this isn't something that for me is, you know, it's not because religion to me is like, boom, okay, it's the same with politics. I don't want to be stuck in any one form of thing to be as a form of conformity or anything like that. It's really hard for me to put into terms. But I tend to repel away from things like that. So if something were to come along and be, now don't get me wrong, I have studied all kinds of different religions and things like that to see, similarities, differences, like Christianity, for example, is more or less, it's the karate of religion. It's borrowed from everything. And that's how Christianity survives, is it either absorbs it and assimilates it. And if it can't, it destroys it. You know, it tries to destroy everything, and that's how Christianity survives over the years, because it's continuously evolving, and that's how it's getting new people. And because, oh, well, we do this now too, and you know, it's not a carved in stone kind of thing. People will argue that with you. And the other thing is, when you try to show people, no, this right here that you're worshiping, this came from this religion, and that came from that religion, and this came from this Nordic religion, mm-hmm. and all these different things. So now, the idea of Jimmy Buffett as a spiritual construct, to be like, okay, I can listen to this guy, I can relate to what he's saying, the things that he's saying in these songs, you know, they give you a fresh perspective on life or whatever, but there's nothing about Jimmy Buffett that says, hey, in the afterlife, this is what's going to happen with your soul, or worship me and this is what will happen, you know, whereas religion, that's another staple in religion, is there's, when you die, this is, you know, something, you become greater or a certain way or something like that.
Well, not all religions, because...
Not all religions, no.
Yeah, but I was going to say, Buddhism is not really...
Buddhism is when it... Well, actually, no, I believe in Buddhism, there is, when you die, your spirit moves on and becomes part of the greater whole, kind of like the force, for lack of a better term, tying it back to the geekdom of it. But there is... there is a thing that's like, you know, if you follow this religion and this path, this is where it leads you. Like in regards to like what I do, for example, magic, there's witchcraft has kind of become a general catch-all term for anybody who practices magic to anybody on the outside looking in. A lot of people just like, you're a witch. And it's like, I'm not, but sure, for purposes of the conversation, because I don't want to sit and have a huge conversation, I'm like, yeah, whatever, I'm a witch. When witchcraft is itself much deeper than that, you have witchcraft and then you have Wicca, which Wicca is a religion, and then you have different forms of Wicca, which have broken down over the years to become different. Like, you can't just say, well, I'm Wicca. It's like saying, well, I'm a Christian. Okay, well, which denomination, the 2,000 plus denominations of Christianity are you, and why is it your version of Christianity is right? You have this happening in the magical communities as well. You know, you have all these different things that are going on, and people are always trying to break something down and to make it, no, this is my form of this, or this is my form of that. And when that happens, in my opinion, it kind of ruins things. So if you're a Jimmy Buffett fan, or if you're looking at Jimmy Buffett as a religion, I don't think that's a good and safe thing to do, because it kind of ruins it. Now, if you were to say Jimmy Buffett is a spiritual go-to thing, which kind of what Tool and a lot of the music, like How Long, all these different bands and stuff are, they're kind of like that for me. They're kind of a spiritual thing for me to go to, but I don't look at it as a form of religion or anything like that, because it ruins it. It's not...
Well,
am I making sense?
But at the same time, that's exactly what people did with the Big Lebowski, and did that ruin it?
But
people looked at the Big Lebowski and looked at its connections to Shinto Buddhism. I think it's Shinto Buddhism.
Yes,
it's the Tao. Yeah, the Tao.
Taoist.
Yeah, Taoist Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
And literally created their own religion from it.
Well, that's fine as well. But I don't think that Judaism quite takes itself as seriously as some of the other religions do.
But who said the Jimmy Buffett people have to take themselves seriously?
Well, at that point, then it's a joke religion, and then you're also demeaning it. Like, if you're going to be like a member of the Church of the Subgenius, they at no times take themselves very seriously as a religion at all. It's just a bunch of people getting together and having fun and having a good laugh. The Church of Bacon, for example, is another great example of an organization that they're like, well, we're not actually religious. We just worship Bacon as an absurdity of it. The actual full-blown Church of Satan really doesn't worship Satan. They use it as a construct, for lack of a better term. They actually don't believe in anything. They're fairly agnostic, but they use the Church of Satan as their backdrop for what they do. They're just really into the aesthetic and stuff, which breaks down even further because there are now multiple churches of Satan. And it's like, well, ours is the real Church of Satan. Well, ours is the Anton LaVey Church of Satan. And at that point, that's when I kind of step back and go, you're ruining it. You're messing everything up.
So what I'm looking at is, like, I see the parallels between what could be the parrot head spirituality and Judaism spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Because both of them are about a philosophy or a lifestyle of acceptance and trying to make the best of the situations you have.
Mm-hmm.
So both of those could, whereas Judaism has a religion that is, well, it is not taking itself too seriously, is believed and is followed with beliefs. I mean, to the point that there are whole books written on the spirituality of Judaism.
You have the same thing that happens with the Church of the Subgenius, though, and J.R. Bob Dobbs.
Mm-hmm.
So
what's the difference between the Church of the Subgenius and Judaism?
Oh, good Lord. Of the two, if I had to choose one of them as a religion that I would follow, I would probably go with the Church of Judaism.
So
for the fact that the bottom line of there is be a good person, drink your white Russians, be cool.
Let's not say which you would follow, but which do you think consider themselves... Hey, this is actually a belief system that brings me comfort versus...
the Church of Judaism, absolutely.
Yeah, because
absolutely.
You could easily say that same thing about the Jimmy Buffett fandom or religion.
I mean, if you want to take this a step further, you could actually go with the Church of the Jedi, which there are two of them, and the Church of the Jedi...
It's almost like I set you up for this the whole time.
Which I did have no idea that was coming, but I mean, if you wanted to go that route... I would say that the Church of the Jedi is far more, and there actually is a Church of the Sith now in response to it, but I think that was more of a, well, even the Church of the Jedi doesn't take itself so super seriously. But there's more of a belief a far greater system in religion and the Church of the Jedi.
So here is the big philosophical question. Is fandom a religion? Or is fandom its own form of personal belief?
It could be both, very simply. Because if you want to break it down, you have what's going on like now with Taylor Swift. You know, Taylor Swift is massive. Like, she actually, her concerts actually affected the economy because of how much money that tour has generated and how big it's been. And her following, her massive following of people, it actually fucked up Ticketmaster, you know? So
And almost got Congress to kind of sort of do something about Ticketmaster.
Will never happen.
Yeah, until the Republicans fucked it up again. But never that's a happened. Whole nother story.
So, I mean, but you're looking at a lot of gray areas there, because these things really, it comes down to a person's personal beliefs and what somebody wants to do with those personal beliefs.
It comes down to a system of beliefs and worldview that relate humanity to spirituality and moral values. So, in that, if that's the box we're going to put stuff in, does fandom in general fit inside that box? Just this question. Does fandom exist as a belief system or culture system that relates humanity to spirituality or moral values?
It could go both ways. It's one of those things that's flexible depending on the situation and where it goes. You know, it's because you do have people like, Jared Leto? Is that his name? Jared Leto?
Leto or Leto, I'm not sure.
He actually has an island and he has a cult. And it's not talked about a whole lot, but he does. I mean, granted,
Scientology, excuse me.
Scientology is another great example, as the story goes, that it was created as a joke by, well, there's some debate on this. The Scientologists say that this is just a story that's made up. Of course, they're going to say, because
the Scientologists are unreliable narrators.
Exactly. And it was that L. Ron Hubbard was sitting around with a couple of other sci-fi writers and said, I can create a religion. It was done as a bet.
Well, he said, I could make 10 cents a word writing science fiction, or I could start my own religion. And I believe that's the quote. I may be paraphrasing the exact price, but it was something about like being paid X number of money to write novels, or he could write his own religion.
Exactly. And I can't remember, Arthur C. Clarke pops in my head, but I think Arthur C. Clarke would have been too old or not. It just doesn't seem like something he would be sitting down with L. Ron Hubbard to talk about. But it was authors that were supposedly up in that genre or vein or level or what have you. So, you know, it is possible. It's again, it comes down to the people, because I know, like, I'm a Tool fan, but there are some really hardcore, like, out there Tool fans. Like, people really...
There are the people who are out there and have had a life-changing experience listening to any kind of music.
Yeah.
And we as a society have moved away are in the process of moving away from the old fire and brimstone religions, and are, as we explore, trying to find enlightenment and trying to find meaning in other places. And I watched a TikTok, and it was talking about atheism. And they actually explained that there is such a thing as an atheist chaplain. And
in a weird way, atheism, not to cut you off, has actually become the lack of being religious, and has in itself kind of become its own religion in many ways. It's a strange situation.
But they talked about one of the aspects of Christianity is, and to an extent, I don't know what the accurate way to refer to the Muslim religion is. Like, a Muslim is a person who follows that religion, but I don't know what to call the religion that is the correct way they identify. But even then, they have their holy
book. It's just Muslim. That's all it is.
Okay. But they have the Quran. Judaism has the Torah. Mm-hmm. But they have these texts, sacred texts, and part of the the religion is the critical reading of sacred texts, mm-hmm. where you're looking at passages, you're critically reading them, and you're finding personal meaning through the reading of and critical reading of the sacred texts. So, this TikTok I was watching was talking about in atheism, there is a movement that one of critical reading texts that don't have to be spiritual texts.
Well, with like, atheism, you're also seeing that people are beginning, they're beginning to have congregational, like church, like meetings and stuff like that, or church, like for lack of a better term, but there's zero religion. They're doing it more for fellowship and things like that.
So
they're adopting the principles of religion without actually putting religion into the religion.
Without
and
putting
people...
a supernatural belief.
Exactly.
To it.
Yes.
So it's, they talk, but there's a book specifically that talks about like critical reading of, I want to say, it's not James. Jane
you realize
Austen.
This conversation is going to piss a lot of people off. You might want to put a disclaimer at the beginning of the show.
You know,
but go ahead.
Like the 20 people who listen, I think will go along with us for the ride. Mm-hmm. But in this TikTok, they asked like people who identify as atheists, what is a book that you read critically to get kind of that life, that affirmation, and that trying to understand the world around you. And immediately the one that I thought of is Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And there's many ways in that book where it kind of reads like, I don't want to say it reads like a religious book, but there's definitely...
You mean like parables and things like that?
Parables, that's perfect. That's exactly what I think. Mm-hmm. They're like the whole part where... Okay, first off, when I say Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I'm talking about the omnibus of all the books together, because there's parts that I don't know which one of the Hitchhiker's books they come from. But specifically, in one of the books, they're talking about how the secret to learning how to fly is to throw yourself at the ground and miss. And, like, that's something that's always kind of resonated with me the same way as... a psalm or something maybe.
It flew very much the way a brick doesn't.
Yeah, yeah. The things like that. But this idea of to get what you want, sometimes you have to be distracted. And when you think you're failing, you're actually getting the result you want because you were distracted and you found what you weren't looking for. That was just the first one that occurred to me. But like, what's a book or something that you feel like that connection that you would read critically to give yourself some affirmation into the world around you?
Fight Club.
That's a good one. That's actually, honestly.
Fight Club is the movie, and well, the movie's actually one of those rare instances where the movie is actually better than the book. And that is a movie that every so many years, for whatever reason, I will go back and watch that movie as kind of like a reset bar. And it's kind of a grim, you know, it's not the most positive of stories, but it is essentially a story of somebody finding themselves and becoming what this is kind of a, we're going to go deep cut into me now. I've spent most of my life being something for other people around me, never knowing completely what the hell I am. And it was a few years ago that I kind of went through a life change, and I'm like, I'm going to be the person that I want to be. And that's how the whole Rogan name actually all came about and stuff. So, and a lot of that had to do actually specifically with Fight Club. Whereas in the story Fight Club, this is a story about a person who wasn't happy with what they were. So they created something to be, they created a person and a thing that they wanted to be. And that's eventually kind of what happened, which is goes back to more like, you know, like an Oriental kind of philosophy. You know?
Wasn't there a book or a movie that's kind of the same thing where it was The Talented Mr. Ripley?
Yeah.
Where he like invented a persona for himself.
More or less, yeah. Because the whole, like, up until I started doing my podcast and the whole, like, I just came up with this name Rogan to call myself. And that was, when I started doing that show, that was because it was all topics and stuff that I couldn't talk about in my everyday life and ideas and things like that I wasn't comfortable talking around with people that I know in my everyday life for fear of getting looked at strange or whatever. Well, it's kind of like the whole philosophy of Bruce Wayne and Batman. You know, you have to, it's kind of that idea of duality or whatever. So you have to kind of create what you wanted to be, and eventually you just finally become that person. And it's kind of odd because I have people that I know through the show that I've become really good friends with, and I'll be like, hey, you can call me by my real name, and they can't do it because they've only always known me as Rogan, or they call me Ro.
And that's a phenomenon that, like, that in itself is its own phenomenon that kind of kicks off with the whole internet age of this idea of having an online persona. And then you have whole generations of repressed people, like especially in the queer community, where they discovered online as a forum where they could be out as a alternate personality, whereas maybe in their own life they couldn't.
Yeah.
And then they found freedom through that.
I frequently refer to this kind of stuff as in a sexuality kind of way, because I've had this conversation with many people where people are like, I just don't, you know, like what my life is going or whatever. I'm like, then create what you want to be, you know, if that's the point, if that's the case, then do what you want to do. Just create, you know, don't be hindered down, because everybody has their baggage. Boy, we are really going off topic here, but everybody has their baggage that they have from the people that they know. People see you and you have what you are, what people see you as, and what you want to be. And the trick is to be able to take all of those things and try to combine them and to make, you have your glamour that you put up that people see you as what you are, and then you have what you want to be. So you kind of have to, kind of craft what you want to be. So anyways, that's why I go back to Fight Club. That's why, you know, that movie resonates with me and that book resonates with me, because it was like, here's a guy that hates his life and, or doesn't want to be what he is. So he creates and does what he has to do to make something else of him. And there's a part in the movie where he's like, hey, you created me, you know, you have to own up to this. And I frequently find myself saying that, or have found myself saying that in a situation, like I said, where I'm like, you know, you can call me by my real name. You don't have to call me Rogan. They're like, I can't. This is all I've ever known you as. And in the back of my head, the scene from Fight Club goes off where it's like, well, you created this. You have to own this. This is, you know, take some responsibility for what you did. So it's kind of like, all right, that's what it is then. This is, you know, okay, well, if that's the way you see me as, of course it is, because that's what I've sculpted and put out there for you to see me as. So, boy, did we go way off topic on that one.
No,
so, anyhow.
No, I was going to say, I would say we're still on target topic because the topic is just broad. I have lived my whole life as what I would consider a nerdy person. And I remember specifically my junior high to high school years being a very miserable person because I was a person who did not have a tribe. And it wasn't until I got to high school and I found, well, I should say before that, while I was that person without a tribe, I found comfort in escapism. Specifically, that was when the Star Wars Expanded Universe novels were just starting, and it opened up a whole new world to me. And I remember finding comfort in those books. And when the more I embraced that comfort, by the time I got to high school, I found other people who found that same comfort from those books. And through them, I found my tribe. I found belonging. I found camaraderie. I found me and accepted me.
Not to cut you off, but I'll let you finish. God, I feel like I just want to say that blah blah had the best movie record of all time. Anyways, I too kind of fit into that basket, and there was a lot of people like us out there, and that was why so many of us were pissed when Disney bought Star Wars and went, okay, no, that stuff can't anymore. It's all Legends now, and a whole lot of us. I remember being on another podcast, and I remember going, but that was Star Wars, and you kind of, even though you didn't take it away from us, you kind of did. You know, they were like, no, the books are still there. They're just not canon anymore. They're considered Legends now. But we both grew up. Mara Jade became Luke Skywalker.
None of that matters to me. Like I don't care. Like, because
you still have that. That's your Star
exactly.
Wars. Yeah,
well,
I get it.
It's like Stephen King very famously said, when somebody was talking about an adaptation of one of his books that didn't fit, the movie didn't fit the books.
One more, man.
He said, but the book's still there.
Mm-hmm.
The book doesn't cease to exist just because there's another version of it.
Yeah.
So I found my acceptance. And, like, looking at back on that, how is that different from the person, from the religious story? Like, how is that different from the story of somebody who found religion? Like, they were searching for meaning in their life. They felt alone. And then they found the teachings of X.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave them a sense of purpose. And they found other people who believed that. And that gave them a sense of acceptance. So, in essence, you have that same story. The only difference is the text where I found that was trashy Star Wars novels. To the point where I still remember those novels. I don't talk to everybody, but I still talk to some of those people. And because they're still a part of my life so many years later, because the bonds of friendship formed over that were so strong. And why is that story any less meaningful than if that story was about religion? And if that is the case, then why do we downplay that one is religion and one is not?
That's a very complicated...
That's
the
whole
point. Not a real simple answer for that.
But that's the whole point. I'm not looking for a simple answer. I'm looking for a deep conversation, and that's what we've been having for the last 30 minutes.
To tie it back to the Jimmy Buffett thing, I just can't see Jimmy Buffett becoming a religion as it is.
He doesn't have to be. That was just an example to start the conversation.
I mean, it's hard to mince the two between spirituality and religion. There's really no real way for me to put it, I guess. I don't know. It's just something you feel in your heart, I guess. But
because if we judge by number of people who believe in it, I would say there are equal numbers of people who believe in Star Wars as there are that believe in some religions. Some what would be considered mainstream religion. To the point where I don't know the exact year. I want to say it was 2010. It may have been earlier. But in one of the UK censuses, more people declared that their religion was Jedi than declared that the religion is Judaism. So,
yeah.
So,
yeah.
Is there a point where our fandoms become our belief?
It's possible. It's very possible. But, I mean, I could see somebody looking at Star Wars and looking at Jedis, because everything is there. And because Jedi
exactly.
were based on a religion.
It was
a statement on religion. Yeah. That's where Jedi came from.
So we talked earlier about, critical reading of sacred texts. Let's look at the movies. Critical watching of a movie. Critical thinking on dialogue and on stories. Like, it is 100% conceivable that you could hold up the Star Wars movies or, like, a Star Wars movie as a critical text to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole philosophies of the Force.
Yeah.
It's a
structure for how you live your life. And it's even at the end of it, you even have the thing at the end of it, when you die, you become one with the Force.
Okay.
So it does encapsulate, like, okay, your soul moves on. There's the thing of...
Thank you for saving me back there, because my brain just 100% stopped.
I know. This isn't a real easy topic to talk about. It's actually very uncomfortable for me to talk about. But the Jediism has everything there. It's got all of it. It's got the celibacy. It's got the evolution of the religion as it goes along. It's got the principles to live by. It's got the idea that when you pass on, something happens to you in the hereafter. Your spirit moves on. You become something greater than what you are here. It's got the lessons that it teaches. Like, I could very well see somebody very easily becoming, you know, being a member of the Church of the Jedi, or, you know, for whatever. And if you break it down even further, if you want to go into the lore of Star Wars and the movies, there are different offshoot branches of the Force, because the Force, being what it is, it's a power. They say in the movies, it's a force that surrounds everybody. It permeates everything. It's a life force. And in the Star Wars books, just because you were a Force user didn't necessarily mean that you were a Jedi.
Right.
You know, you had, and it was acknowledged that, yes, there is something else there, which if you break it down into modern religions, you have the concept of there being a supreme being, a God, which in turn you have all of these different religions that are all worshiping and looking at the same source. But that's what it brings on. Well, you have to worship God my way, or you're worshiping God wrong. Well, in Star Wars, they never go that route in Star Wars. Fortunately, it's never, well, you're not believing in the Force the right way. In Star Wars, most Force users respect one another. Oh, you worship, you know, you're one with the Force. Okay, well, so am I. You know,
I'm one with the Force. The Force is with me.
Exactly. In Star Wars, you really don't have one branch of Force users going after another branch of Force users. It's pretty much you're on team white, or you're a good guy or a bad guy. So, you know, unless there's gray Jedis in between, which do exist, but
so it's very interesting because I was watching something on TikTok, and it was a gentleman was sharing he had two of the earliest known drafts of the Star Wars scripts.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was literally the original title in that version of it was The Adventures of Luke Starkiller as told in the Journal of the Wills.
Mm-hmm.
And he's reading passages from it, and he's talking about like Luke Skywalker is telling the story of the Force and how the first person to learn to use the Force was known as the Skywalker. And there were two sides of the Force, the good and the bad, and they had separate names. And so the Skywalker knew that the more people who learned the Force could be drawn to the bad side of the Force. So he only taught how to use the Force to his 12 children. And they taught to their children, and they're like, holy, that sounds real familiar.
Yeah.
Well,
that's what Lucas had said many times, that the Jedi were a direct parable of religion. That was his idea on religion, which is why, you know, when the prequels came out, that showed the flawedness of the Jedi, how they, you know, how they'd become so arrogant and everything over the years, which did carry on. You're seeing it carry on into the newer stuff that's coming out. Like the last episode of Ahsoka, we were watching it, and spoilers coming here. There's a scene in there. Have you watched the last episode of Ahsoka?
Yeah, I'm
okay. There's a scene in there where Anakin comes back to take Ahsoka on her final lessons and stuff, because she can't move past a certain point in her life, but they're on the battlefield. Now, my wife has never watched any of the cartoons or anything like that. She's got no idea. She went into Ahsoka completely dry with no preface or anything. But they're having the battle where the clone troopers are running around, and Ahsoka's, again, a little girl again. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, this is how messed up the Jedi are. Here the Jedi are taking kids into battle, you know, and she's in charge of all these troops and stuff like that. I'm like, that's pretty messed up when you're taking these children into war, you know, because this is what the Jedi have become, and this is what they do, and, you know, they've become very arrogant and so forth. And I looked at my wife, and I'm like, this is, you know, if you look at it, I'm like, this, you know. And then the Jedi would also take children away from their parents, so when they were shown to be Force sensitive, which also led to their downfall, because Anakin was taken from their mom, from his mom, you know, all of these different things. And it's kind of, when you step back and look at it, it's like, this is kind of a parable of religion. We keep using that word, but this is a direct comparison of religion and how religion becomes messed up, and how it doesn't follow, you know, everything. And then Luke tried to do it again and failed again because of a lot of the same reasons. Granted, they never say it in the movies, but in the books, Luke's academy were voluntary. He never went out and abducted children or...
No,
want to be here? Sure, you can be here, but you got to follow these rules.
Right.
But it wasn't like, you're a child, we have to take you with us, so, you know...
And even in that, in the old canon, even that failed.
Exactly.
It still ended in tears.
Exactly. But, you know, that's what, like, now Ahsoka now, you know, she's, at the end of the episode, she was at peace with herself. She becomes Ahsoka the White. And but she's at peace with herself now because she even said, I'm not a Jedi, but she's something different.
Right.
The bad guys that are in the new show are not Sith. They're something different. They're dark Jedi. They're former Jedi. They're, you know, they still have the apprentice.
Well, that was something in old canon was like, not all dark Jedi were Sith, but all Sith were dark Jedi.
Correct.
Like, there were people who just eschewed the teachings of the Jedi and used the Force for evil who were dark Jedis, but it was a whole separate thing to be a Dark Lord of the Sith or to be a follower of the Sith, which was its own offshoot religion.
Exactly. And that's why Anakin was supposed to be the Chosen One, which was supposed to bring balance to the Force. He was there. The Force was always unbalanced. It's always trying to correct itself.
Mm-hmm.
And he failed. And then Luke came along and you're like, okay, well, Luke is probably going to be the Chosen One and he's going to bring balance to the Force. He kind of failed. So no one has actually come along and brought balance to the Force just yet. So that's, you know, like I don't know if that's what they're going to do with the movies, the new movies and the new direction that they're going with all this stuff, because it's like, obviously, your teachings as a Jedi's have failed. You need to alter the religion to make it work.
Or, you know, maybe we just shouldn't rely on a male Skywalker to not fuck up the entire universe.
Exactly. Well, Ahsoka is more Skywalker than Rey will ever be. But,
well, I was going to say, and it's just, well, I mean, that's the whole joke, is that the overarching narrative of all the Star Wars movies is basically just the Skywalker family drama.
Exactly. Yes, it is. And with the underlying tone of, this is how fucked up the Jedi have become.
Mm-hmm. But it's like, we harp so, or like, we've had this conversation, and all the examples we're using are pretty much exclusively Star Wars, but like, you could apply this same thing to like Lord of the Rings. And in fact, oh, yeah. I think it would go easier with Lord of the Rings because J.R.R. Tolkien went so friggin' nuts on mythology and mm-hmm. the Silmarillion and all that.
Yeah.
But it's just, this is something that has, like, when I had that question pop into my brain, it's like, is Parrothead a religion? It's just kind of started me on this whole journey and this epiphany of like, why are we so hung up on this? And what about all these other things that people have found meaning in? And what makes that different? And I think, like, maybe it's time for us to be a little more enlightened and loosen our definitions. And maybe just like, hey, like, whatever you find solace in and whatever helps you live your life, you know, that's cool.
That is happening now. You're starting to see that. You're starting to see, and we're probably going to get a lot of hate mail. Again, we're probably going to piss a lot of people off. But you're seeing the religious aspects and things starting to break down. Like, I know people that have churches where their church attendance has dropped so much that they've actually had to join with another church. Like, one church will have a sermon in the building in the morning, another church will have the sermon in the afternoon because they're just losing people. And the other thing is, with what's going on with religion right now, is that it's become such a political thing, which, again, you can kind of take back to Star Wars. It's, religion has become very politically driven. You have...
There's a song, one of the nerdcore rappers, Megaran, he has a song called Infinite Lies, and there's a verse in there, and it's talking about she learned more about life from Pac's posthumous works than she ever could have gotten church. And it's just like things like that. Like now that I've had that epiphany, like all these little things are coming to me and they're saying that. And it's just like, why can't we just let people find happiness?
That is, you have a lot of that going on. And like myself, I don't consider myself pagan, but I do associate with a lot of pagan people.
Or like all the people who were like so deeply into Potter, like Harry Potter, and like all the joy and meaning that got to their life of like having them being seen and then being betrayed by J.K. Rowling and finding out just what a garbage human being she is.
Well, see... This is going to take me off of what I was originally going to say, but I give a little bit difference to. Like, Rowling is a piece of garbage, but I do feel bad for the fans, because I also was a Harry Potter fan. I listened, we would, every time we would go down to Florida and back, go to Disney World with the kids, we would always listen to the Harry Potter audiobooks. And we listened to all of them. I would read those books to my kids when they were little to put them to sleep. But again, just because this is difficult, because I'm the same way with H.P. Lovecraft. H.P. Lovecraft was actually a very racist person, but I am a huge H.P. Lovecraft fan. Philip K. Dick, major amphetamine addict, had some mental issues, but I love his work. Harry Potter, I think it's okay to be a Harry Potter fan and be a fan of her work, but still distance yourself from the artist and from the creator.
That's another conversation we've had before.
Yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong. If somebody comes, like, I feel bad for the Potter people and they're like, getting their tattoos and stuff covered up and stuff. It's like, you know what?
In this situation, I would say, I think it's okay to be like to still have those feelings about Harry Potter, as long as what you're doing does not financially support J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, if you keep those separate, you know, if you say, yeah, she's a piece of garbage, she's said and done some very bad things, but I still like her work, and that's where people will be like, well, no, she's a horrible person, you can't support her. And it's like, well, when you read the Harry Potter books, her views really aren't, she's not pushing those views in her stories. You know, at least I don't think that she has. I don't see him in there.
There's some questionable things in there.
There is, but if you're smart enough to know that and you're not subscribing to it, that's different. So
the one glaringly just really terrible thing that always stood out to me is they have, like, the one student who is either accidentally or kind of thoughtfully trying to blow everything up, and specifically that person is Irish.
Okay, whatever. I mean, yeah, okay, fine, I get it. I mean, let's go back to Star Wars. How much stuff in Star Wars was racial stereotyped? You know, how many, you know, the Gungans being like Jamaicans, the dumb Jamaicans, and the business people, the Trade Federation, you know, there's arguments that can be made that these people were modeled after Jewish people.
No. Okay, so we're going to clear up a myth right now. The Trade Federation are technically not trying, like specifically the facial features that are used for those. Do you know, want to know why they look the way they do?
Sure.
Because they repurposed the facial animatronics and maquettes from the Fifth Element. All the Nemoidians are rebuilt from the Mangaloids from the Fifth Element.
Oh.
They reused all of those. This is something I learned a few months ago, wow, like studying prop stuff, is like, that's why they look the way they do, is because they repurposed the internal mechanics they use to build the Mangaloid mass and all that.
Yeah.
And now they, like I said, now that you think about that, you're like, oh, they do look like that,
yeah,
don't
they
you?
Yeah, they do. But it's hard for me to register that the Fifth Element came out before the prequels did.
Oh, I know.
Which makes me go, wow, the Fifth Element actually was even cooler than I thought it was before what they did. The only
reason I know that is because I was working in the Wyandotte Theater the summer the Fifth Element came out. And so, like, as part of my job, I just sat there all day, like, watching the Fifth Element. Mm-hmm. Now, the flip side of that coin is that was also the summer that Speed 2 Cruise Control came out, and I can probably comfortably say I've seen that movie more than any person on the planet.
Because you worked there? That wasn't by choice.
That was not by choice.
Yeah,
because
I'm sorry to hear that. I'm here for you in this difficult time.
I've blocked out most of it, but I still remember little bits.
I don't even
remember
that
movie. For those of you out there, there was a sequel to Speed.
And it did have Sandra Bullock in it, right?
That had Sandra Bullock, but not Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Oh, and there was a crew. It was on a cruise ship, and like Willem Dafoe was the villain. Yeah. It was.
Yeah. Sounds very forgettable.
This was very cash grabby. It's Sandra Bullock's dating a new SWAT team guy who looks very much like Keanu Reeves and acts very much like Keanu Reeves, but you knew it was because they couldn't get Keanu Reeves for this picture. Because, you know, he has integrity.
Why even bother at that point? And when they do this, it's like, And, you know, we'll just do it because we know we're going to go to cash in some money because it's got Sandra Bullock and it's got Speed 2 in it. And Speed 2 was pretty good. You know, it made a lot of money. So people come in to see it just because it's Speed 2.
Hey, man, the only reason I watched it was because of my undying love of Sandra Bullock.
Man, that's I'm here for you in this difficult time.
It is. You know, it is.
You know, let it out. Let it, you know.
So here's another reason that brought me all to this head. It is having what may be considered a religious experience. It is that time of year again. Recently, we had the Wyandotte Citywide Garage Sale. And you and I have both come on here and talked about like all the awesome, super cool, weird things we have found at Citywide Garage Sale or Garage Sale.
Yeah, it's kind of, that's one of my things.
It's almost a semi-annual bit for us.
Yeah.
I did not get as much time to go out this year. And there didn't seem like there was as many people doing it. I specifically didn't go to the guy who always has the cool nerd shit but charges too much money for it.
Yeah, we didn't go. We went out this year as well. Me and the wife and a few of our friends went out. We did really, really well this year. But we hit different parts of the city because we hit Lincoln Park. And then, well, these are, anybody listening in California or whatever, these are cities that are close to one another that we're both having citywide.
I think people understand
that,
yeah.
Yeah, so we went to one cities and then we just kind of meandered into another cities. And we did really, really well.
So, that was what I was doing. I purposely never get the map. I just kind of meander around. And I saw a guy had a garage sale and the reason I stopped was because he had like a couple of polo shirts and I was looking for stuff for my son. Just clothes because, you know, he's a teenager, so he goes through clothes. And it ended up being none of the polo shirts were like an acceptable size. But I'm looking at like other stuff and on a table of just random crap, I see a bag, like a leather bag. And there's metal inside, and it looks like there's a big silver bowl, and it's like, that looks like a camera flash. And as soon as I look at it, I see a very distinct angle on it.
Weren't you supposed to tell the history of the back history to the lightsaber and how it got made and all that ton of stuff?
Yeah, we're going to get to that, but first I'm telling the story. Okay. How I got it.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah. We're going to edit that part out. Yeah. So I pull it out and it is an original Graflex 3-cell camera flash. Now for all of you, for those of you out there who don't know, way back in the before times in the long, long ago, pictures took film. That film had to be developed. And if you needed to have extra light to take that, you had to have a whole separate unit that was attached to your camera, ran an electrical charge through a bulb, and flashed that bulb once that destroyed the bulb after you did it, just to get one picture. But what makes the Graflex so unique is that is the part that became the Luke Skywalker Anakin lightsaber from A New Hope. And what I have passed to Rojin is that flash, minus the flash housing, because it's basically just the handle. And for those of you who follow me on Facebook, and I posted a picture of it in the Old Nerds Drinking Facebook group. Yeah, this is a special thing. So I almost stopped breathing. Like I saw that and it's just like this is the guy who finds like a forgotten like painting at a garage sale for me. Like this is the closest I'm gonna ever have to that guy who bought something at a garage sale and then took it on Antiques Roadshow and it's worth like a fabulous amount of money. Like this is a holy relic. So I go to the guy and I ask him, I'm like, hey, how much for the Graflex? Because these are not insignificant items. And he's like, give me like a couple bucks for it. So I like reach into my wallet and the only thing I don't have that's a 20 is like $6. So I was like, is $6 enough? He's like, yeah, I just said a couple. And he's like, well, why do you want it? And I told him, like, this is what they...
I wouldn't have been able to tell him. I would have been like, I just collect old camera stuff. Because I would have been like, don't tell him whatever it is, because it isn't how much it's worth. And then, you know, I wouldn't have risked it.
So at that point, money had already changed hands.
Okay.
So, but I'm just info dump. Like I love being able to share the esoteric knowledge that I have with other people. I was like, yeah, this is the exact light or the exact camera flash that they used to make the Star Wars props of the lightsabers. He's like, oh, I did not know that. That belonged to my dad. I thought it was just old camera junk. I'm just glad somebody has a use for it. So like I get back to my car and I'm like almost hyperventilating. I'm like, I have physical goosebumps because like this is that thing that is in, this is my childhood. Like you talk about every kid or adult who has a wrapping paper tube, it's a lightsaber. I have the fucking lightsaber in my hands. So I made a TikTok video where I show that I take the flash off and then I have it just as the lightsaber mode and the Star Wars music is playing behind it. And as of this morning, that TikTok has 111,000 views. I'm something of an internet celebrity from this. One of the TikToks I follow or TikTok people I follow, Props to History, he even was shown this video and commented on it. So it's like, oh my God, like some people know me now. So
I, you know what? Here's the funny thing. Here's the sad thing. If I were to see this at a yard sale with that thing on the front of it, I wouldn't have given it a second look.
Like
I wouldn't
100%.
Even...
What gives it away is that distinctive at the top of it where it like swoops down.
Yeah.
And you see that angle and it instantly hits lightsaber. Like that is like, because as we have said, I have watched Star Wars critically so many times. So much of my influential like being has been tied to Star Wars that I see that and immediately knew what it was.
It's funny because when we were watching Ahsoka this week was the one, you know, Anakin was in there and every time they would show him with his lightsaber, you know, immediately I would go to this, you know, like when you brought, because you brought this over last week when we were having a fire at my house watching bad movies.
Yeah.
And
you almost had your own little religious experience when I handed it to you.
It was like, and we were sitting there like cradling it, like it was a baby, you know, like, it was just like, I'm sitting there and I'm holding this and I'm like, fuck. I mean, some people could say, well, yeah, you know, they used this gun in this movie and I own that gun, or Desert Eagle or whatever, but this isn't
so many of the guns we see in those terrible movies. I own several of them.
Yeah, but this is different though, because
like it fit, you hold it in your hand and it's perfect.
Yeah.
It's not like a lightsaber toy we got at Meijer.
Exactly.
It's not like those ones with the little plastic, like where it the blade telescopes out.
Yeah.
It's not even specifically like some of the ones where you put the LED wand in them and like it lights up like it.
Yeah.
But like this, you physically hold it in your hand and it's the dimensions of a lightsaber.
That's partially what made Star Wars cool, because they repurposed a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
To make, okay, I'll hand it back.
Oh, no, because I'm going to, so.
But I mean, that's, you know, that they repurposed a whole lot of stuff because they wanted Star Wars to look, that's part of the look and feel to it. Like everything looks machine and,
well, yeah,
you know,
it's
different.
Like it was a conscious choice with George Lucas when he was instructing the model shop to make these ships and everything. He's like, it's a common practice for doing that where they would take parts of old model kits and like stick them on styrofoam and shape it into a ship shape. Mm-hmm. But those little model pieces would give it the detail. And he specifically said, only use military kits.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want somebody to see these ships and go, oh, that's a manifold off a 57 Chevy model kit.
Mm-hmm.
Like the parts for military models were less well known.
Unless you're making a Y-wing fighter, then you have to use a Porsche model kit, which isn't
made
anymore.
Nope. That's a Slave One.
Okay, but still.
Yeah. So, like, you take the little, like, cone for the flash off, and, like, the little cable that would go to the camera, and, like, holy fuck, it is almost. The only things they did to this beyond just taking those parts off to make this the lightsaber prop, Around the bottom part of the handle, there's this like black rubber like guide thing that it's kind of like this. It's the stuff they would put in screen doors to hold them in place.
Yeah.
So they put that around the bottom of it at like every so often, uniformly.
Mm-hmm.
There's a clamp because this isn't one solid piece of metal. There is a bottom part that comes off and then the top part, and they call it a 3-cell because it literally takes, I think, 3 C batteries to power it. And then there's a metal clamp that holds the two parts together. And then on that metal clamp, there's a little bead or this little string of beads that was the LED light from a Texas Instrument calculator. And that's it. That is... Oh, yeah, there's one more thing. At the bottom of it...
I was going to say, what about the wipers?
No, those aren't windshield wipers. They're that this little rubber stripping from... Hold on one second.
I thought you said there are windshield wipers that they cut to fit.
So that's what I thought until I started doing some research. I did research, folks. There is a website called Wanawanga that he sells parts to make lightsabers. But he has a PDF you can download that's the complete lightsaber prop guide. And it talks about all the parts that are on the lightsaber and what they did to it. The different types of lightsabers they were. So, like, he talks about, like, the main lightsabers from it. Here it is. 7 T-track strips used for the grip. 3 5/8 inches long, with their ends tapered at roughly a 30-degree angle. That's the black thing on the bottom that it looks like the windshield wiper blades.
Yeah.
They're actually this thing called T-track. And T-track material is kitchen guide runner most commonly used for cabinet door sliding tracks or drawer rails in the 1970s. While seemingly ubiquitous at the time, to date, no one has found an exact match in terms of size, profile, and color.
See, what's funny is when you see that, and then you go, like when I was at Disney last year, I went to what they have a shop in the Disney part of the park where you can go in and buy lightsaber replicas.
Mm-hmm.
And we've both seen many lightsaber replicas. So now when you see that, and then you look at a lightsaber replica and you go, you know, once you've seen the real thing, you're kind of like, yeah, this doesn't look right. This isn't a real lightsaber.
It's the uncanny valley,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, this is made, those replica sabers are made to be replicas of the lightsaber that they have departed from the original object they're creating to become their own thing.
Exactly. And most people that aren't as nerdy as you and me won't get that far into it. Now it's ruined it for me because every time I see a lightsaber replica, I'm going to look at it and go, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's not right. But at the same time, it's like, all right, I'm going to ruin it, so I need to shut my mouth and just, you know, just accept it for what it is or what have
and
you.
And literally the only other thing they did to it is on the bottom of it, they pop riveted a little D-ring so I could attach to Luke's belt and mm-hmm. it would hang that. Now, on the clamp that holds the two parts together, it has, like, stamped into the aluminum the company's name, Graflex.
Yeah.
And on the bottom of the lightsaber, it has all the company's information and the information of it, Graflex 3-cell. Now, this is the exact model, but this is not the exact kind that was used in Star Wars. This is a Graflex 3-cell, but specifically, the ones that were used for...
Were 4-cells, weren't they?
No. This one on the bottom says, manufactured by Graflex Incorporated and is made in Rochester, New York, patent pending. The models that were used in Star Wars where it says Graflex, it's a Graflex Folsom That's the only difference. Like, okay, it's stamped Folsom on the bottom, and this one is not. And they know that because in the promotional, some of the promotional pictures where you can see up close, you can see the Folsom on the bottom of it. Now, also for A New Hope, there were three types of lightsabers props. Specifically, there was the hero prop that was like the most unique one that was done. There was a stunt one that looked like the Graflex, but was not the Graflex. And it had a rotating disc on the head of it. And that disc would rotate and reflect light to help them like put in where the special effects were be. Yeah. And then just to add a little ambient light of like it throwing off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was basically just a completely fake tube one that was not the hero, that was for when it just had to be on his belt and was an establishing shot.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the funny thing. So, you know how we've always joked that, like, you know, everything's in the Lucasfilm archives and, like, all I want to do is break into the Lucasfilm archives and get all that stuff?
Yeah.
Almost nothing from A New Hope remains. So, I've been reading more about this lately. Basically, they never knew there was going to be anything after A New Hope.
Yeah.
So we've, for years, just like, oh my God, everything's in the Lucasfilm archive. Almost everything was completely thrown out after A New Hope.
Yeah.
Two, there is only one surviving original Luke New Hope lightsaber. And it was one of the special effects guys. His son was on set one day when they were breaking everything down, and he just took it home because they were throwing it out.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the stunt sabers, or the special effects lasers. Special effects lasers. One of the special effects lightsabers. Special effects lightsabers that had the disc in it, and it sold in the prop store of London auction in 2019 for £147,000.
How much is the one you have right now worth when you've looked around?
So I have seen them for sale in a range between $500 and $700. And those are just the sabers. I have the extra parts, not that they do anything for lightsabers, guys. Yeah. But I have had people tell me they have seen them sell up to $1,000. But they also, because there's nothing left from A New Hope, there's three different versions of the lightsaber because they had to completely rebuild it for Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And then when A New Hope came, when Return of the Jedi came around, they changed a couple of things either to make it look different or just to, like, some damage had been done in filming, so they needed to replace
it. Well, in Jedi, Luke had a different lightsaber anyways.
That's right, because
he's got his hand cut off in Cloud City.
Yeah, so maybe it's not Return of the Jedi, but yeah, there's three different versions of the lightsaber.
Yeah. Now, if you go back to the original, if you go back to the prequels, that's a different story, because he had his lightsaber throughout all of the prequels.
Right, and that was a completely rebuilt one for the prequels.
Yeah.
And basically, they...
Well, you would think at that point they would just manufacture something rather than buy that
and
redo
it. Yeah, so basically, for the prequels, it was a purpose-built thing. It was, they didn't go and get a Graflex and rebuild it. They purpose-built it to be that. They changed around for the other movies. Instead of the Texas Instrument LED beads, they just put like a standard kind of circuit board look in there. Mm-hmm. The T-track was removed in favor of like a more standardized, like straight fin material.
Mm-hmm.
And in one version of it, the fin material goes all the way down. And then in another version of it, the thin material, or fin material goes partially all the way down, then there's screws holding it in place, and then it goes down some more.
They are very, well, I wouldn't say they're very, but the lightsaber, like that lightsaber with everything on the bottom of it, they're actually, it would be very uncomfortable to actually hold in a combat situation.
Yeah.
Because the way, even the replicas that they make, when you're holding it, you're like, if I was doing a fight with this kind of thing, this would hurt my hand.
Well, and it's funny, because so the clamp that holds the two parts together...
it's the clamp that clamps it to the camera.
Yeah, it's also the clamp that clamps it to the camera, but you can put it on so there's this big blocky part of it is on either side. So when I first assembled it, I had it where it was on, the clamp was on the right side, which means I couldn't hold it with my right hand comfortably. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, I have to switch it around so the clamp's on the other side, and now my right hand's where it needs to be, but my left hand is on the bottom part of this block, and it's like, this is super uncomfortable.
I remember when I was down at Disney last year, because I was going to get the Leia lightsaber, and for whatever reason, at the last minute, I decided not to, because I was that was the one thing that when I went there, I was like, I'm going to come home with a lightsaber. And my wife was like, you know, and after I thought about it, I'm like, this thing's going to be really hard to get on the plane. The woman's like, well, we ship it. And I'm like, yeah, that's extra cost and stuff. Anyways, I was holding the Leia lightsaber. You would think that, you know, all the lightsabers, I wanted the Leia one, you know, because that.
Because Space Mom.
Because Space Mom, and she died, and, you know, and all of that stuff. I wanted the Leia one. Which here's, most girls would buy the Leia one, but here's me, a dude, you know, it was that or Palpatine's, because Palpatine's is very elegant and stuff. But anyways, I'm holding Leia's, and I thought the same thing. I'm like, this would really be uncomfortable to be in a fight with, because of the way that it's just not a comfortable thing to hold on to. It kind of like digs into your skin a little bit.
Now here's the crazy thing I realized when I was doing all this research into it, and like hanging on to it and holding it. Do you realize that in A New Hope, the only time Luke ever uses the lightsaber is when he turns it on in Ben's house?
Yep.
And when he's practicing.
On the Falcon.
Yeah.
Yep.
And when he has it on the Falcon, that's literally the last time he touches it.
Yeah. Yep.
Like,
and I actually, it's funny you should say that, because when we were watching the last episode of Ahsoka, there's a scene in there where it directly mirrors the Millennium Falcon scene where Sabine, Ahsoka's trying to teach, it wasn't the last of his episode before, where they're on Ahsoka's ship and she's trying to teach her to fight blind, you know, and it's kind of a homage to the original Star Wars. Again, it's not the same, but it rhymes, you know?
Well, and okay, I got to go on a little side tangent here. It's like, I remember in like the expanded universe, and even going back to like the Star Wars role-playing game, they talked about like you see in the prequel trilogies, younglings training with lightsabers.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, you know, maybe it's a little dangerous to hand that to a child. And it's like, well, how else are they going to learn lightsabers and all this? And then they get to Ahsoka and it's like, yeah, you know, wooden swords still exist.
Yeah.
And so in that scene where they're they're literally
They were training sabers, and there was actually somebody brought that up. And apparently training sabers don't actually cut.
Yeah, they had to like create this whole separate thing to justify the fact that, well, there's just training sabers. Like, you know, wooden swords still exist.
Yeah.
And in that scene, they're literally just using two Boken, like straight out of any, like...
Well, to be fair, the Ahsoka series was very largely based off of samurai movies.
Oh, yeah, and in even the helmet she uses, like, that she has Sabine put on, is basically just a kendo helmet.
Correct. That was also part of the idea behind it. He said that he wanted Filoni. I keep wanting to call him Fellini.
Well, and it's going back to, like, between Filoni and... oh, God, who's the other guy? John Favreau.
Yeah.
Like, they've both said the two big influences are, like, the Sierra Leone spaghetti westerns and the Akira Kurosawa, like, samurai films.
Well, a lot of the westerns were based off of samurai movies. Yeah, they were just ported directly over and made into westerns for the most part.
Yeah,
Mandalorian is Lone Wolf and Cub.
Yeah, Mandalorian's Lone Wolf and Cub. The Magnificent Seven was...
Seven Samurai.
Seven Samurai. Yeah. I forget which
There's
Western.
All in that way.
Yeah, I forget which Western was Yojimbo and.
Throughout the Ahsoka series, though, Lucas was there for almost all of it. Mm-hmm. Lucas was always, and the people that were filming it, because the whole thing behind the Ahsoka series, it's very much samurai training the younger samurai, and people when they were on set were like, when you looked over and you saw Lucas and Filoni sitting there, it was very much the apprentice and the master kind of feel to it.
The
you know?
Circle is now complete. Yeah, when I left, I was but the student. But now I am the master.
I guess Lucas had a lot of input on... Well, the best Star Wars stuff, Lucas... Like Rogue One, Lucas was there for that. I guess he sat in a lot on
series. I have always said, Lucas is great, but he just needs somebody to say, hey...
This is a bad idea.
Like, let's dial it back a bit.
That's what happened with the prequels. Nobody told him, hey, dial this back.
Yeah, there was nobody there.
Yeah. Whereas if he's, because it's Lucas's world, and Lucas, and that's the way it should be at this point.
Lucas, I tell you what, now like knowing that, I really want to try and track down to see if on the internet those early scripts exist on the internet. Because, man, that seems like interesting to see. This was his like grand idea before.
Well, it's there's the same the audio thing. Drama that are the BBC audio dramas they're on YouTube. The original Star Wars scripts, not the ones that you're talking about. Yeah. Obviously, those were like the first original drafts of the script. But the some of the original ones are still out there. Even like in the what was it? Was it The Mandalorian? There's a droid in there that pays tribute to the way that C-3PO was originally supposed to look. There's all these different things that are in the Star Wars movies and shows and things like that. The more newer stuff.
Yeah, and even in Ahsoka. The new Republic ships are based on the original Ralph McQuarrie concept sketches mm-hmm. of the what was supposed to be the Mon Cal cruisers.
Mon Calamari ones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this is another turn we can take. Talking about the lightsaber prop that went up for auction. One of the original... Okay, so remember last year... When that pyro X-wing came up, that was one of the X-wings for A New Hope that was supposed to be used for a pyro and ended up not getting blown up, and it was like, wow, this is one of the very very few X-wings that ever made it out to the open market.
Yeah,
actually, no, it's the only X-wing from filming that's made it to the open market. There was a Y-wing that made it out.
Yeah,
they found another one.
Yeah. It was that guy's auction.
So it was. Greg Ginn was a model maker. He is an Academy Award nominated special effects model maker. Some of his like work is he was part of the team that worked on the mothership from Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Mm-hmm.
He was
another amazing model.
Yeah. He was part of the team that worked on the first season of Star Trek Next Generation. He worked on the original Star Trek motion picture and a couple of the Star Trek movies. Specifically, he personally, I believe, designed the Ferengi cruisers and the Klingon, the Next Generation era Klingon cruisers, mm-hmm. the Vorchas. Well, in amongst that, he also had a personal collection of models. And like, just like we're talking hoarder level of some of the most important models of sci-fi cinema history, going back to black and white serial movies. Mm-hmm. If you're a fan of MST3K in the first seasons of MST3K, when it was still Joel Holstein, they very famously watched a bunch of the serialized, like Rocket Men or Rocket Man, movies. Oh, God damn it. But like Rocket Men from Mars or Commander Cody, he has the original rocket ship models from the Commander Cody series. He has the original helmets and costumes from the Rocket Man series. Mm-hmm.
I saw some stuff on his page that it was like, if I were doing better in life, some of it, for what it was, wasn't that expensive. Like, there was a few props on there that were like $400 or $500. They were obscure different things from off-the-wall shows and stuff, but I was like,
oh, man. Mm. One of the things I saw in there that just had me, like, drooling was the original Hero Ray Gun from Forbidden Planet.
Yes, I saw that one, too.
Oh.
That was cool.
And one of the premier pieces in this auction is this X-Wing. And this is very specifically... one of the Hero X-Wing props. This is the one that has the mechanics built into it to open the S-foils. They're able to place, because of the paint job on it, that this was Red Leader.
Mm-hmm.
So this was Red Leader's X-Wing. It has all the mechanics in it to open up. It has the wires for the lighting in it. Like, they're learning so much about the original X-Wing model. Like, how the reason the lasers look the way they do in the wings is because there's heat sinks built into them for the lights to prevent the model from melting from the heat of the light. Because this is...
Wow.
Because, yeah, this is back when...
LEDs didn't exist
yet. LEDs didn't exist. Yeah. Everything was incandescent.
Yep.
You can buy the auction book for, like, $25, and I might actually throw down the $25 to have it.
Yeah.
Because it... but I know a lot of guys in the prop community, they uploaded like countless high-res images and people are just downloading them to get as much time of these like classic things. So yeah, this is just another instance of goddamn, like if I had an infinite amount of money, I would own a lot of this shit. Because the starting bid on that X-Wing is $400,000.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I would be shocked.
It needs to be in a museum.
Yeah. Like, honestly,
there needs to be a museum for this kind of stuff. There really does.
There are a couple. There is a science fiction museum in Seattle or Portland. But there is a museum of science fiction and fantasy.
The Disney Hollywood Studios has a small section of the park now that's dedicated to Star Wars props.
It's not a museum. Like,
no, it's not. But yeah. Going through there and seeing like Slave One, you know, a movie used Slave One, they have some movie used props that are on display there. Yeah.
Now,
and seeing those, it's like, I was just like, I gotta get as many pictures as I can, you know.
The Smithsonian has a collection of a couple of models. Notably, they have the original Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah, and they have the Galileo as well.
Yeah. So it could conceivably go to the Smithsonian, either the National Air and Space Museum, or that could easily go in the Museum of American History. And recently, the Academy of Motion Picture, I forget what the rest of the acronym is, but essentially the Academy Awards, they opened their own museum. And as much as I hate the Academy, like, good on them for finally recognizing that, hey, maybe we should save some of this cinema history and display it historically. So, Rogen, this is a good place to any. What are you working on?
I'm putting together a couple episodes for Project Archivist, as always. I'm beginning to fill folders up with stories and stuff like that. That's pretty much it. You know, I'm just taking my time putting that show together and started a new job. So, you know, you gotta like you gotta get allotted with your time and that kind of stuff. But that's pretty much it. You know, nothing really major lately. Nothing.
Yeah. And as always, you can find us at the Old Nerds Drinking Facebook group. As always, you can find us at the Old Nerds Drinking Facebook group. Come for the podcast, stay for the memes. Normally, this is where we would say end of line. But in tribute to Jimmy Buffett, they released one of the last songs he had recorded. And I was not emotionally prepared to listen to that song. It's a song called Bubbles Up. And it talks about when you're diving and you lose your way, you follow the bubbles because the bubbles will point you to home because they always float up. So at the end of this particular episode, for Jimmy, we're going to say Bubbles Up. Fuck you. This is my heartfelt moment. Fuck you for snickering.
It's your show, dude. It's your show. I was like, Jimmy Buffett. Oh, my God. I can't stand Jimmy. Okay, let's go.
End of line.
Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
Germans? Forget it, he's rolling.
It ain't over now.
So, what's the plan? Take car, go to Mum's, kill Phil,
sorry,
grab Liz, go to the Winchester, have a nice cold pint, and wait for all this to blow over.
Might as well write them off.
Let's close up the bridge. Let's get out of here. Close it up, lights out.
Where are you headed, cowboy?
Nowhere special.
Nowhere special. I always wanted to go there.
We're going streaking! Yes!
All right!
Move on! Nothing to see here! Please disperse!